friends, Greg Kokel here at Stand to Reason. And as I am broadcasting, today is April 1st, April Fool's Day. And I have two items here that I want to share with you from the news that are in the you can't make this up category, that are in the truth is stranger than fiction category. In fact, if I weren't to tell you this is not an April Fool's prank, you would think it was if you were reflecting on the day I'm broadcasting. Now, of course, you'll be getting this delivered to you on the 2nd of April, and some of you might not be listening to it until much later. But nevertheless, here it is. And there are two items that, like I said, you can't make this up. There is a California ballot measure that is, let's see, what's the wording here? It has just been kind of received by, submitted to the California Attorney General. All right. And these are ballot measures. Most of states have these things. This is pure democracy. In other words, people get to vote on an issue of law, and they just count the votes. Now, I generally think pure democracy is a bad idea, although there have been a few things that have worked out pretty well. Prop 13 in California, which lowered property taxes substantially because older people, as their property was increasing, property they owned outright, their property taxes were going through this, skyrocketing, going through the roof, and therefore they were losing their property and thrown on the street. So that was great. Everybody voted because the politicians wouldn't listen, California. But most of the time, in my opinion, this is a bad idea because people are too easily fooled. Now, this particular initiative, I don't know how it's going to go. But I tell you one thing. If only for one reason, I'm not voting for it. All right. Now, what this bill is ballot measure is meant to make it illegal for health insurance companies to delay or deny health coverage for people. All right. And I want to look for the exact wording. That's if people have health coverage. Let me read it here. The proposed ballot measure would make it illegal for an insurance company to, delay, deny, or modify any medical procedure or medication, recommended by a doctor if there could be serious consequences, including, quoting again now from the piece, disability, death, amputation, permanent disfigurement, loss, or reduction of any bodily function, close quote, according to the document filed by the California Attorney General's office. Now, just looking at the wording, delay, deny, or modify any medical procedure, these are like very vague terms. What does a delay amount to? This is a problem with any law if you have terms that are vague, but that's not what concerns me. Okay. These two words, delay or deny, do they sound familiar to you? In December 4th, 2024, Brian Thompson, the CEO of United Healthcare, was cut down in an act of cold-blooded murder in New York City. And the shell casings left behind had the words delay and deny etched into them. And the reason is the individual that has been apprehended and is being charged with the murder, Luigi Mangione, had a gripe against healthcare companies, which, as far as I understand it, never hurt him. I think he's a fairly well-heeled citizen, And my understanding of reading the reports at the time, he'd never suffered at the hands of healthcare industry, but he thought there was a real problem here. And maybe there is. But only in the state of California will you have what happened here. This ballot initiative that is meant to accomplish the end that I just described in the wording has a name. It's called the Luigi Mangione Access to Health Care Act. In other words, the bill is named after the person who, let me be politically correct here now, allegedly shot Brian Thompson. Now, we all know he did it. We got pictures of him. Of course, he's got to go through the process. I get it. But I'm not violating due process by coming to the conclusion that this is the guy who did it, because you all who follow this know he did. They're not only naming the bill after the man who committed a murder, so it's not just a bill named after a cold-blooded murderer. It is a bill named after this man in virtue of the cold-blooded murder. I am not making this up. I'm reading from the New York Post. Now, I read about this a couple of days ago, and just online, came up as in the feed somewhere, and I thought, holy cow, only in California, right? And then I said, I got to mention this on the air, but I didn't want to mention it just offhandedly because you wouldn't believe me. And so I had Amy find a bona fide source, in this case, the New York Post, though it's not the only place that's carried this, I'm sure, so that I can give you a proper bib source for this information about the California ballot measure named the Luigi Mangione Access to Health Care Act. I don't have to say anything more, right? Do I? Now, it says here, well, maybe I'll add this. It says here that the measure must gather over 546,000 valid signatures from registered California voters to be included in the November 2026 ballot. I'm not going to vote for it if it is. I hope it doesn't even go there. I don't know if it's a good idea or not, all things considered, but I know that California voters are likely to be swayed just by the idea, not by the legal language or the long-term effect of this. And here's a picture of somebody campaigning healthcare, a big giant poster they're carrying, healthcare is a human right. Really? Where'd you get that idea? Who's going to pay for that health care? Are you going to walk into a doctor and say, you must take care of me because it's a human right for you to take care of me? Anyway. That's called a positive right, by the way, just so the language is understood. A negative right is the right to be left alone. And all of the rights in the Bill of Rights are negative rights. You leave me alone to worship, you leave me alone to assemble, leave me alone to speak, leave me alone to arm myself, etc., etc., etc. A positive right says you have a right to get something that someone else has to give you in a material fashion before you do anything just because you're breathing. And of course, now there's a long list of that. And another, Dennis Prager once mentioned, if healthcare is a human right, why isn't food? Why don't we just give away food because it's a human right to have food? This is nonsense. Only in California. Now, I have another piece here that's in the same category. All right. And this isn't from the U.S. of A, state of California. It's, but, you know, it could have been, it seems to me. This is from the U.K., and those people are going a little bit crazy. Here, at least, the whole woke train is chugging to a stop, fortunately, because it's so abusive and it's so inimical to individual freedom and to common sense. So here I have a piece, and I can't tell you. Do you remember the source here for this piece, Amy, that you printed out for me? The Daily Telegraph or the Daily Wire, whatever. It's a British piece. Here's the headline. And I don't have to give much commentary here, just like the last crazy thing, because the basic substance speaks for itself. And it can be captured in one word, lunacy. Here's the headline. I'll give you the bib source in a minute. Yeah. The Daily Mail. Okay, so it's a British publication. This is about something that happened in Great Britain, the UK. Here's the headline. Toddler. Did you get that? Toddler. It's a toddler is a little human being that toddles around. Wears diapers. Toddler is kicked out of nursery. What do you think a toddler would be? Why would a toddler be kicked out of a nursery? Oh, he punched somebody, or he made a mess, or tore things up, or what harm can a toddler do except for wet his pants? Toddler is kicked out of nursery for being transphobic. A toddler has been kicked out of a nursery after being accused of transphobia, new figures reveal. I'm just going to read it. The child, aged 3 or 4, was suspended for, quote, abuse against sexual orientation and gender identity, close quote. Statistics indicate 94 pupils at similar primary institutions were suspended or permanently excluded for transphobia or homophobia in the same year. This included 10 pupils from year 1 and 3 from year 2, where the maximum age was 7 and one child was of nursery age. Helen Joyce, director of advocacy at Sex Matters, that's the name of the organization, Sex Matters, said every once in a while, the extremes of gender ideology throw up a story that seems too crazy to believe, and a toddler being suspended from nursery for so-called transphobia or homophobia is one such example. Teachers and school leaders involved in this insanity should be ashamed of themselves for projecting adult concepts and beliefs onto such young children. Well put, Helen Joyce. But that's not the view of the government. That's certainly not the view of the educational system. I continue in the article, across all primary schools and state schools, the number of pupils suspended or expelled for homophobic or transphobic behavior increased from 164 in 21-22 to 178 in 22-23. So it's a trend here. You think, well, that isn't that many people. Well, if it's just one, especially when it's a toddler, not all of these were toddlers, but the one that prompted the article was, Lord Young, director of the Free Speech Union, said, I would have thought that if your ideology is so rigid, it justifies you punishing toddlers for not complying with it. Well, that's a powerful argument for discarding it in favor of something less dogmatic. Kind of carefully put, but I get the point. So here's what the Department of Education responded with. And I quote, all pupils and staff should feel safe and protected at school and should never face violence or abuse. Close quote. You mean like being thrown out of kindergarten? See, this goes back to a point I've been making for years and years and years and years and years. Everybody discriminates. Oh, that's not making the kids feel safe because you're a toddler, right? But you use the wrong pronoun. So get out of here. You're gone. Don't ever come back. We don't want to see the likes of you again because we care so much about creating safe space for our students. I continue, Department of Education here. Quote, our plan for change sets out our relentless focus on making sure every child gets the best life chances, close quote. Are you kidding me? Misgendering somebody is going to, especially with toddlers or youngsters even, is going to somehow undermine the future of some student in the UK. Listen to this. In 2022, this is a Church of England school. I thought they were religious. In the Isle of Wight, warned a six-year-old boy's parents that he might be deemed transphobic if he were to question another pupil wearing a dress. I know it looks, you're not used to it. Don't say anything. Yeah, it's a guy, a kid, a boy in a dress. Just ignore it. You say, hey, what's up with that? You're out of here. Sally and Nigel Rowe, whose sons attended a Church of England school, said they received a letter from the head teacher and chair of governors. Yeah, it's a big deal. Which declared pupils could be designated the term homophobic, I guess, transphobic, if they showed, quote, an inability to believe a transgender person is actually a real female or male, close quote. So this is their wording. If your kid shows the inability to believe that a boy is not a boy but is a girl, they're not really a girl if they're wearing a dress and call themselves girls and demand female pronouns and have a girl's name. If you say they're not really girls, you're in big trouble. This is the Church of England school. They claim the letter also added that refusing to use a transgender pupil's adopted name or gender-appropriate noun pronouns would be considered transphobic behavior. Apparently, there was quite a row on transphobia when a feminist professor, Kathleen Stock, was canceled and forced to leave the University of Sussex in 2021. And here's her offense. The claim trans women are women is fiction, not literally true. And spaces where women undress and sleep should remain genuinely single sex in order to protect them. That was the crime. Apparently, and fortunately, I guess the University of Sussex here has been fined £585,000 for its failure to uphold free speech. But what grown-up educated person could possibly countenance this kind of thing? Professor, you're out of here because you think that trans women are not women? That's a fiction? You think that males shouldn't be mixed with females in dressing rooms? In places where women sleep? How dare you? So this is still alive and well in the world. Let me make a comment about phobic language. You know, phobic words have become useless for ordinary discourse. There's a number of words that have been so abused that they mean almost nothing. Rape is one of them, by the way. The words don't mean anything anymore. Any of the phobic words. They used to describe some kind of irrational fear, but not anymore. Those words are simply used now to disparage someone who has a perspective that the left doesn't like. It's all it is pathetic name calling. Now, it used to be what was called homophobia, and that, by the way, was the first of the abusive and twisted phobic words. Now we've got transphobia. Now we got, what do we have? We have Islamophobia. We have all these phobias. You don't have Christian phobia, though. That's not in the lexicon. Curious, isn't it? But what used to be called, and still is now, homophobia, was countered in schools by anti-bullying rules. So now you got this whole thing about no bullying. When I was a kid, they never had rules against that. Was there bullying? Yeah. Did teachers intervene with bullying? Yeah. But they didn't have anti-bullying rules. That all started with so-called homophobia. Here's what's ironic about that, though. Those on the left are the biggest bullies on the very issues they have been campaigning against bullying on. And now, at least in the UK, and things like this are happening in this country, though less this year than last year. These things are happening around here, and especially the UK, that's this article. But now the left is bullying little kids who probably can't even pronounce transphobia and certainly have no real comprehension of what the word means. Once again, truth is often stranger than fiction. You can't make this nonsense up, and it is nonsense. Problem is, it's not just silly, it's dangerous, it's destructive. All right, back in a moment with your calls on Stand to Reason.
Hey friends, would you like to be encouraged throughout your week with timely, relevant content meant to bolster your knowledge, wisdom, and character? Or maybe you have a desire to be connected with other like-minded Christians from around the world? If so, then you need to follow Stand to Reason on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Not only will you be able to interact with other Stand to Reason followers, but you'll also stay up to date and informed on our latest resources and events. In our current culture, it's important to have something of value to break up your social media feed. So just visit str.org and find the links to all of our social media platforms at the bottom of the homepage.
Do you have a passion to train people in apologetics, but you don't know where to start? You may be interested in starting an STR outpost. STR outposts are local communities of Christians seeking answers to the hard questions about Christianity. Each outpost is led by a qualified director who trains others with STR content and curriculum in their local church. By becoming an outpost director, you'll be equipped with the content and coaching you need to lead your own outpost. We currently have around 160 outposts, spanning 38 states and in 8 other countries, and we're adding more each month. If you're interested in learning more about starting an outpost, or you want to find a current outpost in your area, visit str.org/outpost. You can also email me, Trip Allman, at outpost@str.org.
All right, a couple of quick reminders here, or announcements before we go to calls. We have a new STRU class. It's actually our 31st class, I think. Is that what we learned today at our meeting? The 31st STRU class. And this is called Unlocking the Mystery of Life. Some of you might have Unlocking the Mystery of Life's Origin. All right. Now, some of you might have seen these Illustra Media series. They're magnificent. I have the set that includes Flight, Living Waters, and Metamorphosis. This was the first one, Unlocking the Mystery of Life's Origin, that they produced on these issues kind of thing. And we have permission now. We've integrated it into a STRU course where it's divided into sections, like 4 or 5 segments. There's interactive elements that are involved, but it is a fantastic video. Okay, now available at STRU. And of course, there's no charge for it. You can find it at training.str.org, along with a whole bunch of other 30 others classes that our team has put together for your benefit. By the way, we're coming up at the end of our student, our reality season, our reality student apologetics season. The final event is in Dayton, Ohio, and it's on April 25th and 26th. The feedback we've been getting in the last 5 sessions, and we just had a session in Philly about a week and a half ago, was that this is the best reality that we've ever had. It's hard to tell because they're all so good. But we got Jay Warner Wallace, we got Jason Jimenez, we have Megan Allman, we have our whole raft of Stand to Reason speakers. Now, I didn't make the last couple because I got grounded by my surgeon, but I'm coming to Ohio. I'll be there as well. April 25th and 26th, if you're within striking distance, it's the first time that we've had anything in the flyover states in middle America, all right? And we're glad to do that. So go to realityapologetics.com and you can get all the information. Now, I'm not sure exactly how many we've got signed up, but we're thrilled about the momentum so far. And if you go to realityapologetics.com, you're going to get all the skinny on it, and we hope to see you there. All right? It's going to be great. One last thing is, some of you like this show, but you've never listened to hashtag STR Ask. If you like this show, and we've got a spot that runs that talks about it, and I say this, if you like this one, you'll love the other one. Because you get Amy Hall, the great Amy Hall, in addition to me, she's the host of the show, and she contributes so much to answering your questions that you send in by hashtag STR Ask. That's the handle. So if you go to what used to be called Twitter, now called X, you can X us and put with your question and just put hashtag STR Ask in it. Now, we go through 4, 6, 7 of these a week as people are asking all kinds of questions, and they're really great. But we're moving through a lot of them. So we're looking for more people to weigh in. So please send us your questions. You don't have to wait in line. You don't have to be verbally clever like maybe an open mic calls. Just send us your question. And keep it short, kind of like a tweet used to be. Do they still have those limits? They don't have those limits. They do. Okay, whatever it is, I don't know the number, but kind of a tweet length or X length, whatever they say nowadays. And we'll be glad to answer your question, and you get Amy's wonderful input at the same time. That's hashtag STR Ask. All right, let us go to our callers, and we have Granbury, Texas, and Craig. Hello, Craig.
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing great, buddy. How are you?
Doing good. Hey, can sort of relate on that opening article you were talking about. The thing that scares me about what it was you're reading is not so much, you know, the face value of what you're reading there, but, you know, as you know, whenever either a state or a federal government wants to pass a law, they pass the antiseptic version they want everyone to approve of first to start the slippery slope. Then they start, quote unquote, fixing it. Huh. And that's what I can see is and what made me think of it. You're talking about United Health. I used to have United Health insurance a number of moons ago.
Uh-huh.
And in there, they, you know, if for whatever reason, you know, that inner drag queen decided to want to come out, they'll pay for the first $75,000 of the gender reassignment surgery. Point being is if there are other insurances that don't pay for it, it'll probably be a way to legally strong arm them into doing so.
Huh. Well, it's interesting. I didn't know this about initiatives that you can have the sanitized version, as you put it. And then the local governments or the state governments can get in and start amending it.
Yeah,
after it passes.
Banks are very good at doing that historically.
Try
to do a bunch of compromises with it, and then as people's attention slowly weans away from it, you can insidiously insert another line in the very famous.
Okay.
For other purposes. Which can mean anything you want it to.
Yeah, well, as far as I'm concerned, what you see at face value with many of these is bad enough. So
it is. It certainly is.
Okay.
But hey, anyway.
What's on your mind, Craig?
Question, yeah. I guess probably the easiest way to just ask the question and spend a little bit of time trying to unpack it, and that is, what exactly is apostasy? And here's why I'm asking. My wife and I, we go to an extremely small church, and I say, you know, on a good Sunday, there's about 12 people. It's a non-denominational church that has broken off from the United Methodist Church a couple years ago and because of the same-sex marriage bit. So it left the church kind of, you know, out there, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Another pastor came in, and he decided he was going to try to turn us into a Torah-observant Hebrew roots church.
Yeah, yeah.
which, you know, when you study it and keep it in the proper context, it's something that's very enriching. But he was trying to make it something so much more than that.
Well, if you're Torah observant, that's extreme. You're going to observe the Torah, because you can't observe the Torah. You can't do animal sacrifices, for example.
Right. And we brought that up, and of course he kept avoiding. But anyway, he's off on other pastures.
Hmm.
And the newest teaching we have been kind of, I want to say, first presented with, now shoved down our throat, is, and I hadn't even heard of this, you know, 3 months ago, is something called the fivefold ministry in Ephesians 4, 11 through 16,
right.
I think it is. And when it was first presented, you know, it was as, you know, gifts of apostle and gifts of prophets and gifts of teaching, which those are kind of some slippery terms that carry a lot of baggage in my estimation, and they're probably best not to use those terms. But then, as you know, one thing leading to another, it now turns into office of prophet and office of apostle, with the implication that, you know, that God's not finished revealing new as yet, heretofore revealed general revelation just yet.
Exactly. That's just what happens when people make that move. This is basically the New Apostolic Reformation stuff, N-A-R, Doug Guyvett and Holly Pivek, P-I-V-E-C, have written a number of books, and I'm not sure what that is in the background. Have you got a fife or a piper there that we can do something about?
Yeah, just outside. It's
all right.
A little wind chime.
So anyway, they've written a number of books that exposing that whole movement. And this is a false ecclesiology, all right? It's an errant ecclesiology. Now, the text in Ephesians 4 does talk about the so-called fivefold ministry. The text is identifying something real. The question is, what is the current state of the church? And if you page back one page to chapter 2 of Ephesians, you see Paul characterizing the church as a kind of a building. And he first says in chapter 2 that the Gentiles and the Jews were separate entities. And then Christ has broken down the dividing wall, that which was a barrier between them, which was the law. The law was meant, in part, to keep the Jews separate from the Gentiles so they didn't become eclectic with their religion, syncretistic, you know, and mixing. Of course, the Jews didn't do a very good job at that, but nevertheless, that was a purpose. But now that Jesus has come, now the two are made into one new thing, and this is called the body of Christ or the church. And then what that Paul says is that this church is built. Now watch the language. I'm just going from memory, but you could look it up. The church is built on the foundation of the prophets and the apostles, with Christ Jesus being the chief cornerstone. So you get a very clear picture of an edifice that's being erected, and there is a foundation. And the foundation is laid by these authoritative office holders of prophets and apostles, and includes, of course, as the cornerstone, that is the first stone that's laid that fixes the formation of the rest of the foundation and everything that builds upon it, and that's Jesus Christ. Now, we're not going to think, okay, Jesus is one cornerstone, but that's just one corner. You've got like three corners to a building, cornerstones, so you've got to have, we got to supply the other ones. So, you know, anybody who argued that way, people would immediately see it, who read the text, this is not what's being offered. It's not made available. Oh, we got three more cornerstones. So who are the prophets or the apostles that are going to be the new cornerstones to fill it out? Paul is saying that is the foundation. That is the base. And then it's being built upon that with living stones, which are the believers. So the apostle and prophet element of the fivefold ministry has already been fulfilled, is my point.
Yes.
If you start in chapter 4 and read that verse, wow, we don't have apostles and prophets, but that's what we're supposed to have, so we're deficient. But if you read the whole book, or at least chapter two and chapter two through to chapter four, you realize, oh, wait a minute, now I see what's going on. And so this is well, there's a lot of noise in the background. I don't know if you can do anything about that, but are you washing dishes or something while you're talking to me? All right. So anyway, when people read that and then make the application that the NAR is making, and also apparently your new pastor, they're making a huge mistake in terms of biblical ecclesiology, that is, the biblical teaching on the nature of the church, and all kinds of error follows from that. Now, I know in the way Amy typed this up, that you have a concern about apostasy. Well, this is apostasy, and but apostasy means a falling away. And so there's, I guess you could say there are different degrees of apostasy. You could have a little bit or you could have a lot. But normally when apostasy starts, it's like a ball rolling down a hill. It gets going and it doesn't stop because people have gotten on the wrong foot somewhere along the line. And when they get on the wrong foot, and maybe what they're doing is denying the authority of the Bible, or maybe they're establishing a false Christology, person of Jesus, or maybe they're establishing a false ecclesiology, which is the doctrine of the church, man, that train has taken off, and it's very hard to stop it. And I think that's what you're facing in your circumstance. That's my suggestion in your, you know, cheaper by the dozen church.
Yeah, and it's and a little bit of a backstory, this isn't particularly the church that we go to. It has a sister associated church that's about 30 miles away, and that's where they're teaching it.
Uh-huh.
And the first big red flag that went up is the pastor, which is the kind of shun that word. They have a prophetess, and the church leadership goes by, you know, Apostle John Smith.
Oh, bad news.
Yeah, and so that's why I have no need to go there. And where my concern is we have one fellow member who's we care for very much, and she's bought into it hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah.
And at this point, there's really not much reasoning with her on it.
That's right.
She just has to find out the ramification.
Once you have a person who speaks for God, that's the end of the discussion. You know, and that's a difficulty here. By the way, just to be clear, there are some African-American-type churches that use the term apostle for pastors and stuff like that, and I'm not suggesting that all of them are into this kind of error. But what you're identifying is a movement, the NAR, a big deal, Northern California, Bethel Church, and Bill Johnson, one of the leaders, one of the ringleaders of that enterprise. If you want more information about it, I'd get a copy of God's Super Apostles by Geivett, G-E-I-V-E-T-T, I think, and Holly Pivek, and that will help you more if you need more help. But you said this church is 30 miles away?
Yeah.
Okay, stay 30 miles away from it.
That's what we definitely intend on doing.
Okay, are you...
Let
me ask you a question. In Granbury, Texas, are you in a very remote area, and so you don't have any larger churches within striking distance?
Oh, we do. It's just most of them, they're either the Church of Laodicea or they just don't care. One that just came out of for about 7 years, they were extremely milky. They were happy being spoon-fed the same line every week. And this church we're going to now, there's four families that are there, and they're just all on fire to, you know, study the Word. And when we have Bible study, our studies will go for 30 minutes or sometimes 3 hours, depending on the topic.
Well, there's a benefit to that. You say it's only 12 people, so there must be small families. But I'm not dissing that. A lot of house churches start that way, you know, good thing. But the thing is that when you have a small group of people, it's hard to oppose kind of a power move by somebody, and it's also hard to have enough educated input to avoid error. All right?
Right.
So I'm just saying there's a built-in liability there that you need to keep in mind. But I'm glad that you called, because hopefully this has been helpful conversation, and I hope you get a copy of their.
It has, and the meat of it, what got me to thinking is whenever you read through the Bible, like in Jude, or in 2 Peter, you know, talking about these apostates, these are people who knowingly and willingly shake their fist and say, I will not.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering, can an apostate be someone who, out of innocent ignorance, is being taught false teaching and just doesn't know it?
Yeah, I think what can happen if a group gets apostate, that you have a teacher that has a heterodox or even a heretical, heterodox just means it's not right, but it's not heresy, okay? It's not that, it's like a misdemeanor, not a felony, right? But
yeah.
If they can have a heterodox or heretical view that the church begins to believe and they follow along with it, the people may not be schooled enough to see the error. And so they fall into it, but it turns out to represent an apostasy, that is a falling away from the basic truth. Now, there's warnings for this everywhere, right? In Acts chapter 20, there is Paul saying goodbye to the Ephesian elders there on the beach, and he's saying, look, I have not shrunk from declaring you the whole counsel of God, but soon will come wolves that will savage the flock. And we've seen this in, you know, then, and we see it now, and we have those warnings. So Paul's last letter, the last chapter, chapter 4 of 2 Timothy, he says, the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but wanting to have their ears tickled, they will turn aside from the truth and turn to error, into mythology. So I think that people can fall into apostasy unknowingly. That's too bad. But and even you could have people who are teaching and they may not even realize they're apostate because they feel they are following an authority that's legitimate, whether it's, you know, maybe they think, okay, this is an apostle. I'm an apostle. I'm a prophet. I'm getting these revelations from God. And off they go. And they don't realize they're teaching a lot of nonsense stuff, unsound stuff, and they're drawing off the flock after them, and none of them may be aware that what they're representing is an apostasy because they're just not schooled enough to do that. So it can happen unawares, but this is why there is safety in numbers in some measure regarding these things, because when you have a larger church, you have hopefully more people that might be better educated to be able to see the error when it shows up and can correct the error. At least call people to account.
Yeah, and that's what, sounds like a small group. Yeah, we're older people in the sense that our kids are already grown and off.
Ah.
And so we're just a bunch of empty nesters.
Yeah.
And with my wife and I and this other couple that have joined, when we started, you know, smelling something wrong almost right from the get-go, and the other members that were there were completely unawares of it.
Okay. Well, now you have some substance. I gave you that little outline about Ephesians 2 and 4, and if you get a hold of Guyvett and Pivek's book, God's Super Apostles, and they've written some others since then, that will at least give you some perspective and give you a base to work with when you talk to some of the other people. All righty?
All right. Sounds great, man.
Okay. Thanks so much, Craig. I appreciate the call. Let's go to break. And back with more of your calls on Stand to Reason.
Do you want to become a more knowledgeable Christian ambassador without sitting through a formal course on apologetics? Well, we've made that possible for you through our STR Quick Reference app. Available for free on iTunes and Google Play, the STR Quick Reference app holds a wealth of information summarizing what you need to know on a range of topics. Learn how to defend the faith, see how other worldviews compare to Christianity, and master the biblical view of morality, all through short, engaging videos. Before you know it, you'll be well-versed on a number of important apologetics topics. In addition, the Quick Reference app also includes a Bible with text and audio, as well as some featured STR resources, all to enhance your learning experience. The STR Quick Reference app will equip you to engage in thoughtful conversation about the key issues of life from a classical Christian perspective. Visit iTunes or the Google Play Store today and download the STR Quick Reference app. And if you enjoy the app, make sure you give it a 5-star review.
Are you looking for a community where you can grow in your understanding of Christianity and learn how to defend your faith? consider joining an SDR outpost. SDR outposts are groups of believers within a local church dedicated to exploring answers to the hard questions about Christianity. Each outpost is led by a trained director who uses SDR's content and curriculum to equip members with the tools they need to think clearly and engage confidently with their faith. With around 160 outposts across 38 states and in 8 other countries, and growing, you're likely to find one near you. Joining an outpost is a great way to connect with others, deepen your knowledge, and be better equipped to make an impact in your community for Christ. To find an outpost in your area, learn more, or to consider becoming an outpost director yourself, visit sdr.org/outposts or email me, Tripp Allman, at outposts@sdr.org.
All right, final segment of this hour. Let's go to Sarasota, Florida, where my kid brother lives. Harry, welcome to the show. Harry? I think I'm on line two. Am I on line two? That's Harry's line. Nate in Tennessee is still on hold. No, wait. Did I do something bad? Am I okay? Okay, could you put that one on hold? Put Harry on hold. Because Harry's probably still around. Okay, I'm going to go to Nate. Now I get nervous. Nate, is this you?
Hey. Yep. Yeah, can you hear me?
I can, Nate. Thank you so much. We'll have to get back to Harry later. So what's on your mind?
Well, yeah, it's actually kind of a specific question for you. So you seem to put a lot of thought into the questions that you ask. And
sometimes.
I'm curious if you had...
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Not always, but go ahead.
I was just curious if you had like a kind of a system or a framework that you've kind of developed over time to come up with these questions, especially the ones that get people to really see the contradictions in their thinking and like really think through issues.
Well, it's a fair question. But the only system that I have is the tactical game plan, which I suspect you're familiar with. And what I did in the more recent book called Street Smarts, what I've done is I parlayed the third step of the game plan, which is using questions to make a point, into a kind of a general apologetics book. So I've taken issues like atheism and abortion and the Bible and Jesus and sex and marriage and gender and stuff like that. These are kind of hot button issues that people are raising questions about. And I have anticipated the challenges are out there. So what I've done is try to think through appropriate questions to expose the fallacy of thinking with regards to each individual objection. And that's what that whole book is about. It's actually quite long. It's like 80,000 words. I didn't think it would be that long. But that's because, I've got a lot of dialogues in there. And Amy helped me a lot to take any hint of snarkiness out of the exchange that I created between me and the interlocutor who has the other point of view. I will just tell you, in terms of my general interaction with people, that, by the way, that book is meant to show people how it works. And in some cases, if you're stonewalled with a particular challenge, like no one knows when life begins, you know, well, what's the next question? Is it
growing?
What
do you mean by that?
Well, you could, but I'm going right now to step three, because in step three is when I'm making my point. So I said, well, is it growing? We're talking about the unborn, the fetus, right? Is it growing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's growing. Well, then it's alive, right? So you don't have to identify when life begins to know that the one in question is alive, because the thing in question is growing. Now, it turns out, all the way back to conception, it's growing. So we know it's biologically alive. So notice that, now I know the problem with that challenge when they say, well, nobody knows when life begins. So I could just say, if there is something that's alive, it's growing. And the fetus is growing, therefore it's alive. Now, that's my point. But it's inelegant. I've just made the point. I didn't. There's no tactical shrewdness to it. So instead of making the point, I asked the question, is it growing? Now it's their turn.
Yeah.
Now the ball's in their court, they answer it. Now when they answer it, they're giving me a piece of information that they are affirming. So they're putting a piece of information on the table. They're not going to take it off because they just put it there. So if they growing. That's the problem. It's growing. Yeah. So if it's growing, then it's alive, right? Well, yeah, I guess so. Boom. End of issue. It's over with. Now, the question is, the point I'm making is, in that book, there's a lot of places like that people might get stuck in conversations. All right?
Yeah.
And so what I've done is offer a question that will get them unstuck and moving forward in the same way I just shared with you. So the other person is engaged, they're contributing, but what they're doing is you've enlisted them as an ally to give common sense answers to things that allows them to affirm and confirm at least a step or two or three of your line of thinking. All right. Now, I put that in the book in advance. And in some cases, when I have a challenge, I've got to sit and think about it. Like, what am I going to write? Or maybe I get blindsided in a conversation and I don't know what to say. So I'm just stuck. So what am I going to do when that happens? When I'm on my own, at my leisure, when the pressure's off, I'm going to think about it. And I'm going to think, what could I have said that would have helped? So sometimes I'm anticipating the objection and I'm thinking, okay, well, let me back up just a skosh here, Harry. I have to know the problem that is inherent in the challenge they're offering. I've got to know what's wrong with it before I can expose the wrong. And that's a ton of the material in Street Smarts is showing what's wrong in all of these challenges. Now, once you know what's wrong, now you want to try to deal with the error by using questions, and that takes a little creativity. So sometimes I'm thinking after the fact, you know, what could I have said? And then I think of it, then I try to remember it for next time. Sometimes it just comes to me. And because I'm focused on asking the questions, and also since I've been in play for quite a while, I can see the problem. Okay, it's arrogant to say. People say, "Well, it's arrogant to say that your view is true, and other views are false." Okay, now that's a statement. People now I know exactly what's wrong with that right away. It's self-refuting. Because they're saying that particular thing is true and opposing views are false. So I'm going to ask the question. I'm going to say, do you think the view that you just expressed is true and others are false? Now it's a question. Yeah, the ball's in their court. Now, but see, because I've been around the block a few times, those kinds of things jump right out at me. Now, what I have to guard myself from doing, Nate, is saying, aha, I got you. That's self-refuting.
Yeah.
It doesn't fulfill its own requirements, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you got to turn it into a question because people respond so much better.
Absolutely.
So much better to that.
It's Jesus said to be gentle but shrewd, okay? So this is what we're doing. So here's my suggestion for you. I mean, I know this sounds self-serving, but I would get a copy of the book Street Smarts, first of all, because there I walk through a whole host of issues that Christians get blindsided on or stonewalled, or they don't know how to respond. And so what I do is try to educate on all of these issues. Here's what's wrong with that challenge, you know. It's my body. Yeah. I can do whatever I want. You can do anything you want with your own body? Anything I want. Yeah. Well, how about this? Can you do this? I had a woman that said that to me when we were in the airport. We were waiting for a flight. And I just made the observation, when you cross the curb, ma'am, the government slapped all kinds of laws on your body, and you didn't object at all. Now, that wasn't very elegant, but that would be the point. Okay, that's what's wrong. So I'm going to try to find a question. So that will help you in a number of things. But I will tell you a secret about how this works, Nate, that the more that you do this, the more it becomes second nature.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of practice. And you realize, oh, I got that. Oh, okay, I see what's wrong there. That's part of your education. Mm-hmm. But it becomes second nature to think of a question that will help them, will engage them, and maybe help them to see the mistake, but in an interactive kind of way. So you asked if I have a technique. I don't have anything more than what I just shared with you. Sometimes it's reflection after the fact. What could I have said? Sometimes, like in the Street Smarts book, you can read before the fact. Well, here's the question to ask. Is it growing?
Yeah.
And by the way, when somebody says on the abortion issue, well, it may be a human being, but it's not a person. I know exactly the question I ask. Do you know my question?
Let me remember it.
What's the difference? What's the difference?
Yes.
That's the question.
Yeah, what's the difference? And then if you can just say that anybody is less valuable because of the size or location.
Yeah, that's the sled test, right. Yeah, I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but it was kind of fun.
No. Yeah, I was trying to remember because I did read Street Smarts, and I absolutely loved it.
Oh, you have it. Okay, great. So you see how that all works. And I would say I'm almost out of time here, so I'm rushing to the to the end. But I would say the key to all of this is doing it. The more you do it, the better you're going to get at it, and the more the impact you're going to have. And when you first start out, you may not be very effective. That's okay. Mm-hmm. That's okay. Remember, if you got Street Smarts, one of the first anecdotes is a gal who tried this tactical game plan for the very first time in a bookstore. And the whole dialogue is there because she called on the phone, and she called on the air, and we had this conversation. That's I know it's accurate, but it's just the very first time that she tried to use the tactical game plan. It was amazing at how it worked for her, and that gave her more confidence to do it again. Anyway, there you go, Nate. Thank you so much for the call. And look forward to chatting with you again, maybe. Greg Kokel here for Stand to Reason. Give them heaven, friends. Bye-bye now.